Frank sat in the small livery office with John drinking coffee. He felt certain that a showdown with Cummings and Barrow was only a few drinks of whiskey away. He realized how alive he felt. It was always thus for him just before, during, and even after a gun battle. He always figured it was the possibility of imminent death that caused the feelings, not at all unpleasant, of being more energized and more in touch with everything and everyone around him. He'd once tried to tell a woman about these feelings, a woman with whom he was having one of his infrequent romances. When he found he couldn't make her understand these feelings, he realized he could never make her understand him either, and the romance had died a natural death, unmourned by either of them.
You could just ride on out of here, Frank.
I could, but that would only delay things. I might possibly get some unsuspecting homesteader in town for supplies killed.
That's true. But there's two of them waiting to gun you down, Frank.
I faced two before.
Well, I reckon you have.
Hinkle told me that Rogers told Grant to run things, that something is the matter with Rogers. Have you heard anything about that?
No, not lately. But I know that Mark can sometimes act funny.
Funny?
He loses his grip on things and don't act right. Like something's loose in his head.
You've seen this personally?
I sure have. Several times when I was working for him, he ain't no pretty sight neither.
The fight may have triggered whatever's wrong with him.
Might have, but don't go blaming yourself. He's had this ailment for many years.
John glanced out the open window.
Cummins and Barrow just stepped out of the saloon, both of them hitching at their gun belts. Oh, my.
What is it?
Preacher Carmody and his sister are sashaying up the street. Looks like they're headed for that new cafe.
They always manage to be in the wrong place at the right time.
The sun made Lydia's hair shine like fresh-oiled saddle leather, and how full and red her lips were, as if they'd just been kissed and were swollen with desire. Frank shook his head and looked around, blushing, as if John could read his silly thoughts.
Ain't been in a new house a week. Why didn't they stay put a while longer? Maybe have another cup of coffee.
Frank smiled at the liveryman and stood up, adjusting his gun belt and loosening his rawhide hammer thong.
Maybe Lydia can't cook?
Now, that there is a possible, by God. But as fine a looking woman as she is, what man would care?
Frank turned toward the door. He didn't have to check his peacemaker. He knew it was loaded up full, 6 and 6.
No point in putting this off, I reckon.
I guess not.
John's eyes were sad, filled with the knowledge that this might be the last time he and Frank would talk. Frank walked out of the livery office and out of the livery. Unseen by Frank, John Platt picked up his Winchester. If by some strange twist of fate Frank took lead from one of those yahoos, John would finish the fight. Richard and Lydia had just stepped up onto the new addition to the boardwalk and were a few steps away from the cafe when both of them spotted Frank. They looked toward the saloon and saw Cummings and Barrow, and sensed instantly there was about to be trouble. Richard took Lydia's arm.
Into the cafe, sister. Gunmen are about to ply their devil's trade.
But there are two of them against Frank... Mr. Morgan.
Morgan is a cold-blooded killer, sister dear. Save your sympathies for someone worthy of them.
But he has a decent streak in him, Richard. I know it. I can sense it. Why else would he stay and pick up the farmer's fight?
I'm sure I don't know. Into the cafe, dear.
Now, by God, you get what's coming to you, Morgan. Me and Nick's gonna see to that!
Frank said nothing as he continued walking, closing the gap between them. George and Nick did not spread out as more experienced gun handlers would have done. They stayed close together, almost touching. Lydia removed her brother's hand from her arm.
I'll sit at the table by the window, Richard. I want to see this.
It's barbaric, Lydia!
I still want to see it. Get us some coffee, please.
Richard seated his sister by the window and walked to the counter. Charlie Jordan wiped his hands on his long apron, craning his neck to try and peer out of the front window.
Trouble outside?
Frank Morgan appears to be marching toward another shootout with two ne'er-do-wells in front of the saloon.
Heavens!
Becky came out of the kitchen to stand by the front door, wiping her hands nervously on the apron tied around her front.
So much violence.
Yes, isn't it just awful?
Lydia dug in her purse for another handkerchief.
You stop right there, Morgan!
Frank was about 50 feet away from the pair.
Yeah, that's far enough, Morgan.
Frank stopped and stared at the men confronting him. He had a half smile on his face, and his hands hung at his sides. It was apparent he felt not the slightest twinge of fear or apprehension.
It ends right here and now, Morgan. You ain't good enough to get both of us.
So which one lives and which one dies? The choice is up to you, boys.
We live and you die. Yeah, that sounds good to me.
How about we all live?
What?
You boys turn around and walk away, and I'll do the same.
Can't do that, Morgan.
Why?
We done made our brags, that's why.
Most everyone in the little village, including the workmen from out of town, had gathered on both sides of the street to watch and listen.
Brags are wishes. Nobody with any sense will hold you to them. Living is more important. Don't you agree?
Enough of this talk! It's time for you to make your play, Morgan, so do it!
Not me, boys. This is your time in the sun. You wanted this action, you started.
By God, we can do that.
All right, I'm waiting.
You think we won't?
Frank said nothing. He waited, still with a smile on his face. The sun was high in the sky, and the day had turned out hot. Sweat was forming on the faces of Cummings and Barrow.
You ready, Morgan?
I've been ready.
Now!
Nick grabbed for his six gun, but Frank's draw was as smooth as silk and honey. The bullet from Frank's peacemaker struck him a hammer blow in the chest, creating a small black hole in his denim shirt just over his heart. He was on his back in the dirt.
Oh, mama!
The would-be gunslick's hands went to his chest as if he could somehow hold in the blood that was pumping out in a large stain on his shirt. George Cummings held out both hands, chest high, his face a mask of terror at the ease and speed with which Morgan had shot his friend.
Don't shoot, Morgan! Don't shoot, I yield!
Unbuckle your gun belt.
The barrel of Frank's peacemaker was trained on George's head.
Let it fall to the street.
I'll do it. I'm doing it now. Don't you shoot, Morgan.
Cummings' rig fell to the street.
Kick it away from you.
Cummings kicked the gun belt away. The man's face was pale and slick with sweat, and his eyes were so wide that the whites of his eyes showed all around the pupils.
Oh, my God! Oh, I'm hurting something awful! Oh, Lord, somebody help me!
He whipped his head back and forth as if looking for divine help.
It's Paul Adams and his sons, Frank.
Damn you, Morgan! I think you killed me.
Frank lowered his pistol and turned to face Paul Adams, but he kept watch on George Cummings out of the corner of his eye. Adams looked down at Frank.
My son lies near death, Morgan, shot in the back by some damn cowardly ambusher.
Probably Ray Hinkle. He tried to kill me earlier today. I left his body at the main gate to the GP spread.
Good. I applaud you for that. But Grant Perkins and Mark Rogers are still alive.
And you plan on tackling them alone? Just you and your remaining sons?
I do.
You'll be riding into a death trap, Paul. They got 10 guns to your every one. And they're manned by men who are used to killing others, not farmers like you are.
Be that as it may, perhaps we will be successful in ridding this world of two very evil men.
Doubtful. You'll never even get close to either main house before you're all gunned down.
You have a better plan, Morgan?
No. But I don't intend to throw my life away needlessly without any chance of success. Think about this, Paul. You'll be sacrificing your sons if you go through with your plan.
You might be correct. I will admit I have allowed emotion to take control of common sense.
Now you're thinking. Come on back home and stay with your son. He'll need you by his side.
Paul was silent for a moment. Finally, he turned eyes filled with hatred on Frank.
You hear what happened to Bob and Nellie Fraser?
Frank nodded slowly, his face sympathetic.
Mrs. Fraser needs medical care. She is in a deep state of shock, I believe the doctors call it. She tried to ride for help, but she was too badly injured and collapsed in the effort. Several of the farmers' wives are with her. No one, including myself, knows what to do for her. Do you?
No, I'm sorry, I don't. Rest is the best thing, I'd guess.
Paul nodded his head and picked up the reins.
Thank you, Morgan. I expect you're right about the futility of us trying to attack Rogers and Perkins all by ourselves. We'll wait a while and see what happens.
He spurred his mount, and he and his sons were gone in a cloud of dust. Frank cut his eyes to Cummings. The man had not moved.
Get on your horse and ride out of here, George. Don't tarry. If I see you again, you'll be buried in this valley. There won't be no warning or any second chances. If I ever set eyes on you again, I'll shoot you dead, understand?
I'm gone, Morgan.
Move!
Richard and Lydia Carmody stood on the boardwalk and watched as the body of Nick Barrow was dragged away. Lydia's hanky was fluttering like a flag in the wind as she fanned her flushed face. Frank walked over and stepped up on the boardwalk just as Charlie Jordan stepped out of the cafe.
Is the coffee hot?
Hot and the best you can get in the territory.
Well, I'll sure have me a cup then. Maybe two or three.
Richard and Lydia followed Frank into the cafe. After Frank was seated, he noticed them standing before his table. The Reverend's face was set and stern-looking, and his lips were puckered as if he'd been sucking on a lemon. Frank motioned for them to sit down at his table. He figured he was in for some moralizing from a man who knew next to nothing about human nature.
Who was that man you saw handily dispatched?
A man who fancied himself slick with a pistol.
Obviously, he wasn't nearly slick enough.
In this game, not nearly is just as bad as not at all.
He looked up as Charlie placed cups of coffee on the table.
How about some pie?
My God, man. You just killed a man. How can you think about food?
I was hungry before the shooting, and I'm still hungry. As satisfying as killing pond scum is, it don't do nothing for an empty stomach.
Incredible.
The preacher shook his head, looking heavenward, as if the good Lord would appreciate his distaste at talking with such a man as Frank Morgan.
You looked so brave standing out there all alone.
A slight blush colored Lydia's cheeks as she batted her long, thick eyelashes.
I was afraid for you.
Well, thank you. Actually, to be honest, that was the second time I faced a gun today.
Oh?
Out came the little hanky once again.
Ray Hinkle, another gun hand. He shoots from hiding. A coward, but dangerous.
You think this Hinkle person is the one who shot Paul Adams' son, Jimmy?
Yeah, I do. But he won't be shooting anybody else. He's taking himself a dirt nap right now.
What a quaint little expression.
How do you like your new house?
It's very nice. I know we're just going to love this area. As soon as present matters are settled.
It'll be settled before the end of summer.
How can you be so sure?
Tempers can't continue to run as high as they've been without boiling over. When they finally reach the boiling point, the end will be in sight.
They haven't reached that point yet?
Not quite.
John Platt walked into the cafe, and Frank waved the liveryman over to the table. John motioned for a coffee and sat down next to Lydia. She moved over slightly away from him and raised the hanky to her nose as the familiar odor of horse manure followed John to the table.
One of the workmen just told me that we're getting a doctor.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Starting on his office in the morning. The doctor's due to arrive in a few days. He's a young feller just out of medical school, somewheres back east.
Boston, I'm sure.
Oh, no doubt.
What we need next is a paper and somebody to run it.
Oh, wouldn't that be marvelous? Richard could do a regular column on the Bible.
Yeah, that would sure be interested in reading.
John winked quickly at Frank.
Are you a Christian, Mr. Platt?
I reckon. I was baptized as a young feller back home, but I've been backsliding for a good many years.
I shall expect to see you at services this Sunday. Fellowship is a wonderful thing.
Right. That's what my old woman keeps telling me. About 10 times a day.
Mrs. Platt is a good Christian woman. My sister and I are so looking forward to having dinner at your home this evening.
A supper? Tonight?
Yes. Have you forgotten?
It must have slipped my mind.
Conversation stopped as Bobby Doolin stepped into the cafe. The gunfighter walked to a corner table and took a seat.
Coffee and a piece of pie.
Coming right up.
Doolin looked over at Frank and smiled.
You lucked out again, Morgan. That fella you gunned down was no gun hand.
Doolin, I'm getting real tired of your mouth.
You know what you can do about that, Morgan.
Oh, my.
Lydia's hanky commenced to waving to and fro once more. Frank half rose from his chair.
You want me to do it now, Doolin?
You want it now, Morgan?
That's up to you.
I'll finish my coffee and pie first.
If this lady wasn't sitting here, I'd tell you where you could put that coffee and pie, Doolin.
Lydia's hanky began working at high speed, and her face flushed scarlet while her chest heaved.
Oh, goodness.
Don't be vulgar around women, Morgan. That's not like you at all.
Like many Western men, Doolin held a good woman in high regard and would never consider being crass in front of one. Frank glanced at Lydia.
If I offended you, Miss Lydia, I'm truly sorry. And I assure you it won't happen again.
Frank took his seat once more with a look at Doolin that would have frightened a lesser man to death.
Thank you, Frank.
I don't want to cause no trouble in front of a lady.
That's fine with me.
But you and me, Morgan, we'll settle this thing between us real soon. You count on that.
Whenever you want it.
Frank finished his coffee and pie in silence. He then pushed back his chair and picked up his hat.
Nice seeing you, folks.
We'll see you in church this Sunday?
Doubtful. But my thoughts will be with you.
See you, Frank.
Outside, on the boardwalk, Frank stood alone for a moment. A new town was soon to be. But Frank had no doubt that its birth would be heralded in more blood. He just hoped it wouldn't be his own.
Far as I'm concerned, we can burn the whole damn town down to the ground.
That'd be like my mama used to say, Mark. Cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Whatever.
Mark's eyes took on an odd sort of glaze.
Mark? Mark, can you hear me?
I doubt it.
Mark Jr. was in the doorway to the study. Grant turned to look at the young man.
Are you sober, Mark?
Sober as a judge. How's Victor?
Damn Victor.
Sorry to hear that.
What's wrong with your dad, Mark?
Well, with Daddy, used to be he'd feel these spells coming on and he'd hide in his bedroom, pretending he had a bad headache. And we all knew it was another spell.
I recall those headaches. I never knew it was a spell like this.
This is a bad one. I never seen one last this long. I'm wondering if he's gonna come out of it.
No, of course he will.
I don't think so, Grant. They've never lasted this long before.
What's wrong with the old fart now?
Peaches Rogers stood in the doorway. Grant grimaced at the young woman's words. He looked at her. A very pretty young lady with a mouth like a garbage barrel, and if the gossip around town was correct, the morals of an alley cat in heat.
Show some respect for your father.
Go to hell.
Peaches walked over to her father. The senior Rogers was sitting in a chair, his mouth open. A bit of drool leaked from one corner of his mouth, and his eyes had the long stare of death in them.
You're disgusting. You ought to be put in an asylum.
Shut up, Peaches. Make yourself useful. Gather up Daddy's guns and store them away, out of his reach.
Well, that's a good idea. You're not entirely stupid, brother, no matter what everybody says about you. Grant, Lucy tells me that homesteader's kid is gonna make it.
When did you see my daughter?
She left a few minutes before you got here.
I told her to stay home.
She don't pay no more attention to you than I do to that drooling bag of crap there. Looks like you're in charge now, brother. What are you gonna do about the squatters?
Burn them out.
I believe that when I see it.
You sure that's the way you want to go?
That's what Daddy was talking about doing before he went off his bean.
Then we better talk.
Suits me. Peaches, you take care of Daddy.
Yeah, sure. I'll look after the old fart. Make sure he don't mess himself or nothing.
The two men walked out of the study.
Your sister needs her mouth washed out with soap.
She definitely needs her butt kicked. Now then, I've been thinking about them squatters.
It was a quiet night and a cloudy one. The air was heavy and smelled like rain. That would be all right, for the ground needed a good soaking. It would help the crops. Frank smiled as he put a flame to the cigarette he'd built. He was a little surprised to find he was thinking like a farmer. Well, it wouldn't be a bad life, he supposed. His thoughts abruptly switched to Lydia Carmody, and that made him uncomfortable. He forced the woman out of his head and sent her back to her brother. Frank did not want any romantic entanglements at this stage of his life. Every time he got seriously involved with a lady, it seemed as though he drew a losing hand. He was better off alone. He leaked smoke from his nostrils as his thoughts went back some years to the last time he'd seriously considered sharing his life with a woman. Her name was Angela, and she was just on the right side of 20 years old. Her ma and pa owned a general store in Las Cruces, New Mexico territory, and she worked there helping with the customers. She hadn't been what most men would call a looker, but she had a strong, honest face and a laugh that would warm Frank's heart whenever he heard it. Angela was waiting on an Indian couple and teasing their young son as she slipped him a piece of peppermint candy without charge. Frank found himself smiling for the first time in over a month at her infectious laughter and easy manner with people. She came over to the counter to add up his purchases.
Excuse me, ma'am, but do you know where the best food can be found in town?
Well now, mister, that'd be my house, of course. Especially on Sunday afternoons when I fry up a couple of chickens for my parents.
That sounds awfully tempting, but I need a place I can go to and eat.
She'd stared at him seriously for a moment.
Supper's at 7. And if you're late, don't expect there to be much left because it doesn't last long.
Frank tipped his hat and left without thinking to ask directions to Angela's house or even to get her name. Both of these tasks he accomplished before Sunday rolled around, and he had showed up at 7:10, dressed in his best Sunday go-to-meeting finery. Angela's parents had been as charming and as welcoming to a stranger as she had been, and the evening was one of the most enjoyable Frank could remember. So, too, were the picnics and rides in the countryside that he and Angela began to have on almost a daily basis. Weeks had passed, the snow began to melt, and still Frank stayed in Las Cruces. He began to inquire of the local banker about ranches in the area that might be up for sale, and he even went so far as to begin to attend church on a regular basis with Angela and her parents. He'd asked her to marry him, and they'd gone to see the preacher to set a date for the ceremony when Angela began to cough and came down with a high fever. The doctor said later it was pneumonia and that she had about a 50-50 chance of surviving it. Frank sat by her bedside for 6 days, sponging her forehead with cool water and giving her bottle after bottle of any patent medicine he could find in the town, hoping to find something that would cure her. On the morning of the 7th day, Angela had opened her bloodshot, teary eyes, grabbed Frank's hand, and whispered her love to him as she squeezed it with all her might. Seconds later, her grip relaxed, and she left him forever. Frank brushed away the tears that had formed as he remembered Angela, flipping his butt out into the yard in a shower of sparks. Frank suddenly came alert. A rider approached out of the darkness of early dusk. His hand dropped to his peacemaker.
It's Dan Jones, Frank!
Light and sit, Dan.
No time, Frank.
Dan reined his horse in and leaned cross-armed on the saddle horn.
I brung news, though. Nellie Fraser died a few hours ago. She just up and died. Heart quit on her, I reckon.
Sorry, Dan.
Me too. I gotta tell Claude and Mavis. Nellie and Mavis was good friends. See you, Frank.
What's gonna happen to their kids?
Tom and Colleen Johnson are gonna take them in and raise them. They're good folks, and they love kids.
All right. Be careful out tonight, Dan. Riding alone out here near the ranches is dangerous.
I will.
Right then, Frank made up his mind to do something he probably should have done weeks back. He'd do it first thing in the morning. Frank rode into the county seat 2 days later. Someone must have seen him on the trail and told the sheriff, for there were 4 deputies waiting for him, lined up on the boardwalk in front of the sheriff's office. Frank ignored them and reined up at the livery. He walked over to the hotel, got a room, and washed up a bit. Then he found a small cafe and had some breakfast and several cups of coffee. He was working on his 3rd cup of coffee and had just rolled a smoke when a tall man with a handlebar mustache strolled in. He was accompanied by 2 deputies. The man sat down, uninvited, at Frank's table. The deputies stood behind the man with their legs spread and their hands on their hips as if they were expecting trouble. The tall man opened his coat and showed Frank his badge.
I'm Sheriff Ned Breedlaw.
I'm Frank Morgan.
I know. Why are you in my town?
I came to see you.
To see me?
That's what I said.
What about?
The lawlessness in a little community about 2 days' ride from here. It's located in a series of valleys. You familiar with the settlement?
I am.
People are being burned out of their homes over there. Kids being shot. Men killed and women assaulted and raped. You know all that, and yet you haven't seen fit to do a damn thing about it? Why?
I don't like your tone of voice, Morgan.
I don't give a good goddamn what you like or dislike, Sheriff. I asked you a question. Answer it.
I ought to arrest you, Morgan.
On what charge?
I can think of something.
You want a bloodbath in this cafe, Sheriff?
Frank leaned back in his chair, letting his right hand rest on his right thigh next to his holster.
Try to arrest me on some trumped-up charge.
I said I ought to arrest you, Morgan. I didn't say I was.
Frank relaxed and put his elbows on the table and leaned close.
Let me tell you something, Sheriff. Mark Rogers is a sick man. Word is, he's losing his sanity. His son has taken over the ranch in the war to drive the farmers out, teaming up with Grant Perkins and his hired guns. There's about to be a real bloodbath in the valley, Sheriff, and I'm asking for your help.
It's a big county, Morgan. It's a good 2-day ride over to the valleys. I don't have the deputies to spare. I've got 2 deputies out chasing rustlers now, and 2 more about to go out chasing down some damn renegade Indians who jumped the reservation and are raising hell. If you got problems over in your neck of the woods, you folks handle it.
And you don't know anything about it.
I didn't say that. Sure, I heard about it. I heard you've killed a couple of hired gun slicks, and you'll probably kill several more. I heard you whooped Mark Rogers in a fair stand-up fistfight. I'd like to have seen that. Mark and Grant have been the big he-wolves in this county for a long time. But times are changing, and so am I. I got to if I want to keep being sheriff. And I like being sheriff.
What are you telling me, Sheriff?
I think you can figure it out, Morgan. The way I hear it, the settlement is growing. Some folks want to name it Valley View. If that happens, you can elect a marshal, or a mayor can appoint one. You get my drift?
Frank poured another cup of coffee.
We handle it ourselves and you stay clear of it, right?
You said it, not me.
We got a dozen or so workmen over there right now. Might as well get them to build up a jail while they're there.
Yeah, that might be a good idea. And a marshal's office while they're at it.
You're awfully accommodating, Sheriff.
Morgan, you might say I can see the handwriting on the wall. The Sidebusters is here to stay. Times are changing fast. I don't want no federal judge sending troops in here. And since I'm still sheriff of the county, the marshal will be under my jurisdiction. As long as he keeps the lid on over there and doesn't make too much noise doing it, I won't have a problem with him. We on the same page now?
Same page, same book.
Good.
Frank tossed the makings on the table, and the sheriff rolled himself a smoke and signaled for the waitress to bring him a cup of coffee.
Sides, Morgan, I hear you're a wealthy man. Got stocks in factories, mines, railroads, and such as that. I know that fighting a man with bags of money is a losing proposition, especially a man who's got the grit and guns to back it up. And you definitely got all 3 of them things.
Frank finished his coffee and sat for a moment, he and the sheriff not speaking, just staring at one another. Finally, Frank pushed back his chair and stood up.
Nice talking with you, Sheriff. I'll have to tell John Platt he was wrong about you.
That old horse thief? Hell, I've been knowing John for more years than I care to count. Well, he wouldn't have been wrong a year or so back, but I'm smart enough to know a man's got to change with the times. And I smelled the wind, and I'm a-changing.
See you around, Sheriff.
See you, Morgan. Oh, by the way, the land office is just around the corner, in case you want to drop by there.
You might do that, Sheriff. Thanks.
Don't mention it. And I really mean, don't mention it. Especially around some ranches we both know.
Frank walked out of the cafe and went straight to the land office. He had filed on 10 big lots on the soon-to-be-named town of Valley View, 5 on one side of the main street, 5 on the other. Then Frank located the doctor's office and went on in.
Have a seat. I'll be with you in just a few minutes.
No hurry, Doc. I'm just looking for a man.
What man?
The young doctor who's going to set up practice in a town about 2 days' ride from here.
That would be me.
A young man appeared in the doorway.
I'm Dr. Archer. I'm just looking after things here for a few minutes while Dr. Camper is out.
He walked to Frank and held out his hand.
And you are?
Frank Morgan.
Nice to meet you. Let me finish inventorying supplies in here and I'll be right with...
The young man stared at Frank for a moment.
Frank Morgan?
Yeah. Something matter?
I... I have heard the name back east, read several stories about a man named Frank Morgan. Most were not very flattering. I must tell you that.
And don't let that bother you, Doc. It sure as hell doesn't bother me.
Then you are really the duelist, Frank Morgan?
Reckon so, Doc.
Well, nice to meet you, Mr. Morgan.
Relax, Doc. I'm not gonna start shooting.
That's good to know, Mr. Morgan. So, how may I help you?
I'm in town for a few days on business. I live near the community where you plan on setting up your practice. I was wondering when you might be heading that way.
In a couple of days? Why do you ask?
Do you enjoy riding, Doc?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I do.
You want to ride over there with me?
Why, yes, that would be nice. I could better see the country, and I would enjoy the company. It's kind of you to invite me.
Do you have a horse?
Actually, no, I don't.
You object if I pick one out for you?
Not at all, sir.
I'll go do that now and get you outfitted. I'll bring the horse around in a couple hours. You can sit the saddle and get to know each other.
I'm looking forward to it, sir. I'll take that time to visit the bank and get a draft to pay you.
My treat, Doc. Don't worry about it.
Are you certain, sir?
I can afford it, Doc. Believe me, I can. Have you made arrangements to ship your equipment over?
That's all taken care of.
The men shook hands and Frank went to the livery. Satisfied that the horse would suit the young doctor, he had ridden back to Dr. Camper's office. Dr. Camper had returned and looked at Frank through wary eyes.
You really are Frank Morgan. I'll be damned. I thought you'd be a much older man. Dr. Archer stepped out to buy himself some trail clothes. Come on in and have some coffee. He'll be back in a few minutes. That will give me time to give you an examination.
Do what?
I want to see if you've been shot as many times as people say. Take off your shirt and sit over there.
Frank began unbuttoning his shirt.
Might as well, I reckon. Have at it, Doc. Tell me if I'm gonna live another day or two.
As Dr. Camper began to poke and prod the many scars on Frank's body, Frank noticed a small stack of magazines next to the examining table. He picked one up off the top and saw it was a dime novel written by Erastus Beadle and had a picture of Deadwood Dick on the cover blazing away at some desperados in the background. Just under the title was smaller print saying that inside was the real, true, unabridged tale of how the infamous gunfighter Frank Morgan shot down 5 Mexican bandidos in Del Rio, Texas. Frank grinned. He didn't remember ever shooting down 5 Mexicans in Del Rio, bandidos or otherwise, but that probably didn't make any difference to the men who wrote in these penny dreadfuls. Dr. Camper noticed Frank looking at the novel and pointed.
Oh, those books belong to Dr. Archer. I'm afraid he's got rather a romantic idea about life out here in the West, and a rather distorted view of the people who live out here.
Frank shrugged and pitched the book back into the stack.
Well, he'll find out the truth sooner or later. That, for the most part, people are the same all over. Some good, some bad, and some in between.
Why, Mr. Morgan? I had no idea the infamous gunslick Frank Morgan was a philosopher.
You face as many men over the barrel of a gun as I have, Doc, and you get to be a pretty good judge of the human character, or the lack thereof.
Frank and Dr. Archer pulled out at dawn after only a single cup of coffee.
We'll stop up ahead after a few miles and I'll make breakfast and coffee. We'll both have us a good appetite by then.
You Western folks certainly are early risers.
We don't believe in burning daylight, Doc.
You certainly don't.
About 2 hours later, by a tiny creek, Frank made coffee first and then began preparing a trail breakfast. He sliced up a 1/2 pound of bacon, fried some potatoes, and laid out bread he'd bought in town the day before.
I am ravenous. I don't recall being this hungry in years.
It's a trail, Doc. Good, clean, cool air smelled from the back of a good horse will do it every time.
What is that you're cooking with those potatoes?
Onions, Doc, with a little bit of red pepper. Makes them nice and spicy.
Ah, they smell wonderful.
The doctor had eaten half the bacon and fried potatoes, then took a hunk of bread and sopped out the skillet with it. Then he had poured another cup of coffee, and while the coffee was cooling, he stuffed his pipe.
Ah, what a wonderful meal. It's the best I've had since... I don't remember when.
That saddle sitting all right?
Quite comfortable, actually. Very different from what I'm used to.
You're used to riding on those pincushion saddles. Never could understand how you folks sat those things for long distances. Damned uncomfortable, if you ask me.
It's all what one gets used to, I suppose.
The men had finished the coffee, and Frank cleaned up the tin plates and made sure the fire was out. They were back in the saddle and had covered half the distance to the settlement before Frank had called a halt and they made camp for the night.
No telegraph in the settlement, Frank?
Not yet. I'm told the wires will be strung before fall, if everything goes according to plan.
The settlement has to be an official town, I suppose.
Something like that, I think. Valley View is the name it's gonna go by, so I'm told.
It's a nice name. Has a nice sound to it.
I reckon.
Frank, please forgive my lack of tact, but I have to ask you something.
Go ahead.
Have you really been in shootouts with 1,000 men and killed them all?
No, Doc. I haven't been in 1,000 shootouts. But looking back, sometimes feels like it.
How did you ever get into such a dreadful life?
Dreadful, Doc? Well, I suppose it is. Or would seem like it to many people. Back when I was just a kid, about 14 or so, I was pushed into a gunfight. I lucked out and killed the man before he could kill me. Then after the war between the states was over, the man's brother came looking for me. I killed him. After that, trouble seemed to look me up, and I handled it. The term gunfighter stuck to me.
And you're a rich man, or so I'm told.
Well, that was not of my doing, Doc. My ex-wife was a moneyed woman. She left me a lot of stocks and bonds and so forth. I really don't know how much I'm worth. I try to do good with the money.
So I've heard. A modern-day Robin Hood.
Well, that might be stretching things somewhat. If I recall the story, Robin Hood stole from the rich and gave to the poor. I don't usually go around stealing from nobody, not even the rich. I just try to spend my money where it'll do the most good for the most people.
Frank remembered the story about him in the book in the doctor's office and how he'd been portrayed as a mad dog killer.
Oh, I don't know. I've heard some good things about you, Frank.
That would be a very short list, Doc.
Perhaps, perhaps not. Do you believe in the hereafter?
Sure.
That's when the list will be read, Frank. It matters not what people here on Earth believe.
Oh, you're probably right, Doc. Well, I'm gonna go to sleep. Night.
Good night, Frank.
Frank rolled over, fluffing up his saddle blanket on the saddle he was using as a pillow, and fell almost immediately asleep. The doctor, not quite through with his coffee yet, sat staring into the fire, trying to reconcile what he'd read about this famous figure of the West with what he'd seen so far. While in medical school back east in Philadelphia, not Boston, as the Reverend and his sister thought, Archer had been fascinated with all the lurid tales of the Wild West, as it was called back there. He'd read everything he could get his hands on about the West and the characters who lived there. Before long, he'd decided that was where he wanted to set up his practice when he graduated. He began to haunt the mortuaries and morgues in the city, entreating the men who ran the establishment to let him see all the gunshot and knifing victims, sure that that would be the majority of his practice in the Wild West. So far, he'd been out here almost 6 months, and the only gunshot he'd seen was one where a rancher blew his little toe off when he was bucked off his horse and his pistol had gone off accidentally. Hell, so far he'd been more of a dentist than a doctor. He'd had no idea how bad people's teeth could become if they weren't taken care of, and cowboys, it seemed, took damn poor care of their oral hygiene. His eyes flickered over to Frank Morgan, lying a few feet away from him. Well, if the stories he'd been reading for the past 6 years were true, going to practice medicine in any town where Morgan lived would surely entail his treating any number of gunshot wounds. They had just reached Van and Virginia Kalin's homestead on the west end of the valley road when Van ran out of the cabin and waved at the pair.
Frank! Frank! Stop!
What's the matter, Van?
The Watsons got hit night before last, Frank. The house and barn burned to the ground.
Anyone hurt?
Hugh took a bullet in the shoulder. Passed right through. He's hurting some, but he's up and around. Jessica and the kids are all right.
Thank the Lord for that.
That's what I say too, Frank. Who's your friend?
This is Dr. Archer.
Your stuff come in a few days ago, Doc. Joe's got it stored at the general store. Glad to see you made it. Looks like you're gonna be busy here.
Certainly looks like it. Where is Mr. Watson now?
Just up the road at the Joneses.
We'll stop and I'll have a look at him.
Anybody taking responsibility for the attack, Van?
The men was riding horses with both the GP and the Diamond brand, Frank.
It's really started now. Well, I knew it was coming. We'll be pushing on. You and Virginia take care.
Will do, Frank.
When Frank and Doc Archer rode into the Joneses' yard, Reverend Carmody's buggy was there.
The local preacher. He's from back east. Boston.
Oh?
Yeah. He and his sister figured you probably trained there in medical school.
No, I trained at the University of Pennsylvania, though I do know some people from Boston. We probably have some mutual acquaintances back there.
The doctor had been introduced all around, and Lydia's eyes sparkled when they exchanged pleasantries. Dr. Archer was a handsome man, and would be quite a catch for any woman, especially one as ambitious and as well-bred as Lydia. Doc cleaned up Hugh's wound and put on a fresh bandage.
The bullet hit nothing, Major. You're fortunate in that respect. You'll be as good as new in no time, assuming infection doesn't set in.
Archer got to his feet and looked at Hugh's wife, who was standing nearby.
You need to change the bandages at least once a day and be sure to boil the new ones before you put them on the wound.
I'm gonna rebuild. I'm gonna stay. No low-down snake of a rancher is gonna run me and my family out.
I'll help you rebuild your house and barn, Hugh.
Well, thank you, Frank. That's mighty decent of you.
Frank, there is something you need to know. A man rode into town right after you left for the county seat. He's a hired gun. Says his name is Scott Dice.
Frank slowly nodded his head. He was silent for a moment.
Scott Dice.
You know this man?
I know him.
Is he fast?
Fast? Scott Dice is the best.
Doc Archer, who was washing his hands in a basin in the corner, looked up at this statement by Frank. In the books he'd read, all the gunfighters were inveterate braggarts and never admitted any other gunman was any good with a gun.
I always heard you were the best, Frank.
You know what the definition of the best gunfighter is, Hugh?
No.
Someone who just hasn't met anyone faster. Yet.
If this Scott Dice is so good, why isn't his name as widely known as yours?
Because he's very secretive, Dan. Someone hires him, he comes in, does the job, and's gone within hours. He works under a dozen names.
But not this time, obviously. And why would that be?
Because he's going up against me. He wants it known he's the man who put me down.
Can he do it?
He's got as good a chance of killing me as any man I've ever faced.
You say that calmly enough, Frank.
No point in denying it. It's the truth.
So what are you gonna do?
Ride into town and face him.
Now?
Right now.
John Platt came out to meet Frank and Doc Archer as they rode up to the livery.
You heard what happened out at the Watsons, Frank?
We stopped out there.
Then you know who's in town.
Scott Dice.
He's over at the saloon now.
How's he looking?
Mean, Frank. He didn't make no bones about who he was or what he was doing in town. Come right out and said he was here to kill you.
He's got it to do.
Can you take him, boy?
I reckon we'll see. This is Dr. Archer, John.
Pleasure, I'm sure. Did you see Hugh Watson? I heard he got shot by those bastards who tried to burn him and his wife out the other night.
I did. He's going to be all right.
We got us a name for the town, Frank.
I heard. How'd it come about?
Joe Wallace wrote to Governor months ago. We all forgot about it, including Joe. A letter come in the day you left. It's now official. Valley View it is.
Sounds good to me.
Frank squatted down and petted Wolf for a moment. Without speaking, he looked up over his shoulder at John Platt and raised his eyebrows. John nodded. indicating he'd take care of Wolf if Frank didn't survive his upcoming battle. Frank stood up, removed the hammer thong, and slipped his peacemaker in and out of leather a couple of times.
I think I'll go over to the saloon and have me a beer. Cut the dust out of my throat.
I'll go with you.
So will I.
Both of you, stay out of my way. Things might get raw in a heartbeat.
When Frank walked into the saloon, every patron except one jumped to their feet and left in a hurry. The one remaining was seated at a table, his back to a wall. He did not look up as Frank entered.
Just a beer.
Of course.
Mug of beer in his left hand, Frank turned from the bar to look at the man seated alone.
Hello, Scott.
Frank, nice day, isn't it?
Real nice. Long time since I seen you.
Years, Frank. It was back in 68 or 69, I believe.
El Paso, I think.
Yes, somewhere down along the border.
What brings you to town, Scott?
Dice smiled, a cold movement of the lips that didn't extend to the rest of his face or to his eyes.
Money. A lot of money.
To kill me?
Yes.
Somebody must want me dead awful bad.
Somebody does, Frank.
Even if you got lucky and killed me, Scott, that alone wouldn't make the homesteaders quit the land.
I don't have to get lucky to kill you, Morgan.
I'd say you're gonna have to get very, very lucky to kill me, Scott. 'Cause speaking quite honestly, you're just not that good.
Damn you.
Scott smiled at Frank's ploy to get him riled up so he'd act without thinking. Frank smiled when his trick didn't work.
Well, looks like it's time to strike up the band. Have ourselves a little dance.
As Scott got to his feet, the bartender slipped out the side door of the saloon. Scott moved his shoulders a little, getting loose and ready as he stared back at Frank, neither man showing the slightest trace of fear. Suddenly, Scott's hand closed around the butt of his .44. Frank's draw was cat quick, but even as fast as he was, Scott matched his speed. Frank's bullet ripped into Scott's chest, whereas Scott's slashed the top of Frank's left shoulder. Scott took a quick step back to stay on his feet. Scott grinned in a macabre fashion as blood began leaking from his mouth. Frank raised his pistol again, taking aim. Scott doubled over and took several steps backward to lean against the wall, loosely waving his pistol toward Frank.
You bastard.
Frank said nothing. He felt the slow drip of blood leaking down from the top of his shoulder.
Damn. You're good.
Again, Scott lifted his .44. Frank cocked his hammer. Frank walked over to the man and looked down at him. Scott's face was deathly pale, his lips bloody.
I guess I just wasn't lucky enough this day, Drifter.
I reckon not, Scott.
But I got lead in you anyway.
You hit me.
Do me a favor, Drifter.
Name it.
Bury me proper.
You got it.
See you in hell, Drifter.
Scott Dice closed his eyes for the final sleep. Doc Archer and John Platt rushed into the saloon. They'd been watching through the front windows and had seen the gunplay firsthand.
My God! I must take pen in hand and put today's events to paper. This is a story the newspapers will be clamoring to print.
You bet your ass.
Frank let the hammer down on his .45, twirled it once, then slipped it into leather.
One more obstacle gone on the way to peace in the valleys.
Joe Wallace was by the bat wings. Frank walked to the bar as the barman slipped back in the side door. He looked up as Reverend Carmody stepped into the saloon. The preacher walked over to stand looking down at the bloody body of Scott Dice.
Oh, Lord.
Carmody cut his eyes heavenward as he clasped his hands together.
When will it end?
When Grant Perkins and Mark Rogers are dead.
More killings?
The preacher turned away from the body of the dead man. Frank did not reply to that. He walked over and stared down at the body of Scott Dice, thinking that could be him someday. He knew it was his fate, sure as hell. Frank shook his head and turned away and met Reverend Carmody's eyes.
I'll get some people to wrap him up in a blanket and carry him off. Get one of the carpenters to knock together a coffin. He asked me to give him a proper burial. Said I would.
What were you thinking while you looked down at that poor man, Frank?
Nothing of any importance.
Doc Archer set his black bag on a nearby table and motioned for Frank to join him. Frank moved over to the table and took a seat while the doc opened his shirt and peered down at the wound on his left shoulder.
The bullet cauterized the wound, Frank, and the bleeding has already stopped. I'm going to put a small bandage on it to keep it clean, and you'll need to let me change it every day for at least a week.
He applied a soft cloth to the wound and taped it in place.
Thanks, Doc.
When Archer finished, Frank fixed his shirt and walked out of the saloon. Frank walked over to his new property. He then began pacing out his just-purchased lots, looking to speak with the foreman. Frank knew there was more than one way to bring the big two ranchers to a ceasefire, and he could damn sure afford it, so what the hell? He figured he may as well do something worthwhile with his money.
You sure about this, Mr. Morgan? This is gonna cost you some good money.
I'm sure. This is gonna give you men steady work for a long time.
Damn sure will. All right, sir. I'll do a work order and get the material ordered.
Frank walked back to the livery, a smile on his face. He took a small bottle of whiskey from where he'd seen John Platt hide it, then sat down in the hay next to Wolf. He slowly scratched the dog's ears as he thought about his life and how close it had come to be ended for him a short while ago. Frank smiled at the thought of the lawyers and money managers in San Francisco and Denver when they read his will. They would be terribly disappointed to lose control of so much money, but all of it would go to good causes. He had a list of cities where the money would be used to open and fund orphanages, libraries, and in some cases, small hospitals. But his favorite use of the money was in his instructions for the lawyers to search out men who'd served in the Confederacy and had fallen on hard times. Frank planned that at least a third of the money remaining at the time of his death would be used to make life a little easier for these veterans of the War of Aggression by the North. Lord knows, they hadn't had it easy in the war. But by God, if he had anything to do with it, their last remaining days would be a little bit better than they had been. Wolf moved his head under Frank's light touch, showing he'd missed his master the last few days. Frank reached into his shirt pocket and pulled out a piece of bacon he'd saved from breakfast. He held it where Wolf could see it until the cur's mouth drooled. Finally, he pitched the bacon high and watched as Wolf jumped and caught it in midair. Grant poured himself a drink of whiskey across from Mark Jr.
Tell me again. He did what?
He's building a damn town. I heard he sent letters to his attorneys asking them to invite people to settle in the town of Valley View.
What the hell is a Valley View?
That's the name of the settlement now. It's official, too.
Since when?
Ever since a territorial governor signed some damn paper making it legal.
That means he'll soon have a marshal and mayor and judge. And maybe even a town council and all that crap.
I guess so.
Damn!
I say we attack the town. Tonight. Burn the damn place to the ground.
No, that's completely out of the question.
Why?
It's a town now. A regular town. You pull something like that and the governor will ask for troops to be sent in. That or federal marshals. We don't want that.
No. We sure as hell don't. Then, what do we do?
I don't know. Give me time to think on it some. Time. I need time to think. How's your pa?
Out of his head. He's crazy. This time he ain't coming out of it. We got him locked in his room. He rants and raves and jobbers and hollers. I guess we're gonna have to chain him up like some wild animal and haul him off to an asylum somewheres.
You don't seem too broke up about it, boy.
I ain't broke up about it at all, Grant. And neither is Peaches or Mike. Living with pa was like living in the house with a grizzly bear. Grant, your house is awful quiet today. Where is everybody? Where's Miss Perkins?
I sent Darlene out to California to visit her sister. Tried to get Lucy to go with her, but she refused to go. You know what a hardhead she can be, don't you, boy?
Yes, sir, I do. I reckon that's why she and Peaches get along so well. They're so much alike.
I don't know where Lucy's gone off to. She and your sister are probably together, getting into trouble.
Victor's probably laid up somewhere, is drunk. He isn't worth killing.
Do we hire more gun hands, Grant?
No. I thought when Scott Dice got here, we'd finally be rid of Frank Morgan. That didn't work out worth a damn.
Yeah, I know. Grant, I know you and Daddy are worth a lot of money. I finally got to open the books. But all these gun slicks on the payroll is expensive, and there ain't no work getting done.
You ain't telling me nothing I don't already know, boy.
Our foreman just quit yesterday.
So did mine. Said he was pulling out and wouldn't be back.
Grant?
Yes, boy?
I'm scared. We could lose everything we got if this mess don't turn around in our favor.
No, boy. We won't lose everything. But we will lose a lot of land and access to some water and have to cut back the size of our herds.
I don't intend for that to ever happen, Grant. I'm not gonna let it happen.
Don't do nothing stupid, boy.
We can't just sit here and allow it to disappear, Grant. Paul wouldn't have allowed that, and since he's, well, out of it, then I guess it's all up to me, right?
It's up to us, boy.
Well, what do we do?
Grant stood up and reached for his gun belt hanging from a peg on the wall.
Let's take a ride out to the river and think about this situation. We'll come up with something.
We better.
Joe Wallace and Frank were in the Sunburst Cafe. With them at the table were John Platt and the blacksmith, Earl Martin. Those two men, so far, made up the entire town council. They'd been appointed after a meeting the day before of all the farmers in the area.
I've been appointed mayor of Valley View, and I have full authority to name a marshal.
Don't look at me.
You've toted a badge before, and I happen to know that you were once appointed to be a federal marshal, right?
I can see where this is going.
And I got this here message from Sheriff Breedlaw. Come in on the stage yesterday. You've been named a deputy sheriff.
He held up the paper for Frank to see.
Says so right here.
Frank took the paper and read it carefully. Sheriff Breedlaw had indeed named him a county deputy sheriff. Breedlaw had set him up for a fact. And probably Joe and John Platt were in on it as well.
You boys sure must have given this a lot of thought.
Frank looked first at Joe, then at John, with a scowl on his face. The men looked at each other and smiled.
You might say that, but not only can you enforce the law here in town, you can work out in the county, too.
How wonderful.
The men grinned at him like cats in a canary cage.
And Sheriff Breedlaw sent this over, too.
John took a badge out of his pocket, lay it on the table, and pushed it toward Frank.
Pin it on, Frank.
Somebody has to swear me in.
Consider yourself sworn in, Marshal and Deputy Sheriff Morgan.
Frank picked up the badge. John signaled toward the kitchen, and Charlie Jordan and his wife Becky came marching out, Charlie carrying a large cake. He set it down on the table.
Congratulations, Marshal Morgan.
Frank pinned on the badge.
I reckon I'd better see about getting a jail built.
On one of those 10 lots you bought?
Why not? It'll probably be the only jail in the territory where the marshal owns it.
The small town of Valley View and the area around it grew by 150 people in a month's time. The liveryman and Frank were sitting on a bench talking outside the stable on a warm summer's morning.
It's gonna be a regular city.
Frank pointed to several mounted men passing through the town.
That's the third bunch of gunslicks I've seen leaving over the past few days.
You reckon the war is over?
No. The Diamond and the GP haven't given up. Not by a long shot. They got too much to lose to throw in the towel. Fire isn't out yet. It's just smoldering.
What do you think they're going to do?
I don't have any idea, John. But we've seen about 10 or 12 gun hands pull out. That still leaves 30 or 40 men on the payrolls drawing fighting wages.
And the pretenders are leaving. The hard case is staying.
Yeah.
John pointed to a line of heavily loaded wagons rolling through town.
More wire for the Diamond and GP. They're stringing miles of the damn stuff.
Barbed wire is the boundary line of the future. Never thought I'd see it happen. There it is.
Hell, Frank, you can't wire out the flow of water. That's impossible.
No, but they can dam it up.
The river makes a split some north of your place. Both branches narrowing down and then comes together again south of town.
I know.
They built a dam just before the split.
They could divert water onto both ranges.
That's right. And the homesteaders would be left high and dry, literally, during the dry months, when they need the water.
You reckon?
I think so, John.
Well, you're the law. Stop them.
Nobody's done anything yet. Besides, that would take a court order, and that might have to come from a federal judge. I don't know anything about the finer points of law.
Where are you going?
Take a ride. I'm gonna go snoop some.
Let me know what you find.
Will do.
Frank swung into the saddle and headed north, toward the river's fork.